was started, I guess, when I had a frantic call from the office here that some equipment was destroyed, fried. And then, so I looked into that, and our IT specialist came the next day and was repairing it. So I don't have the full story, personally.
Neither do I. I just
spoke. What was destroyed or hurt or, I don't know how serious it was. And a part of that had to do with, I guess, moving the equipment that's here. And it is mobile, yes, but it's treated as stationary now, I guess. So that's the question we have to deal with. And until we get a full story of what happened with the equipment and how serious it was, I guess we have to make a decision on whether we're going to do it. It's unfortunate because there are only a couple areas. I mean, you have quite a bit of free space, yes. Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I put 6 vendors in here usually.
But we have to consider, I guess, the cost too.
And that's where I would take ownership for the responsibility of doing it myself. So that courts...
They have to decide. That's their equipment, their deal. So
right, yeah.
Maybe we could barricade off one section. Maybe not get the 6 vendors in, but 4 or something might be a compromise. Protect that.
Why couldn't we move it in next door at the admin office?
It was a big hassle.
That's what happened.
It was all packed in there, and then before they can start their business, they had to sort all that stuff.
But I mean, yeah, it just requires planning, logistics, and everything else, and figuring out what and how much and where. Right?
So back in 2018, Rob and I personally took apart this, and we did all that ourselves. We didn't have as much equipment.
No.
So this here, we stored it in the kitchen. Yeah. So anyhow, I stopped booking vendors.
Yeah, until we get a result. And it's unfortunate we don't have Ina here tonight, so I don't have all the background on what happened then.
Yeah, I met with Roshan in December, and I heard about it. Mm-hmm. That's how I know I knew about it. We didn't have an in-depth conversation.
No,
it was just a brief comment. Yeah.
So I think, we'll probably have to put that one on hold for tonight. I know you want to get working on it.
Christmas is a long ways away, right? It's a long ways away, so.
But we can also consider alternatives. I suggested to barricade that off perhaps or whatever, but we'll just have to see and hear both sides and what did happen that day and how much it cost to repair it. So
yeah.
I don't have the full story.
Yeah, that's fair enough, Mayor Hop or Mayor Moore. I'm tired. Can you tell? Lack of sleep. That's all it is. Lack of sleep.
No, I won't comment.
No, that's right. I said to Rob about coming over. I've been so tired lately. I said to him, "Watch I do that," and I just did it.
Okay, what else is on your list there?
Okay, so basically, plans are well under the way for, as you well know, for the new season. I would like to finally say to the McKellar Market is a vital economic engine for McKellar, and we hope Mayor and Council will take into consideration what we spoke about today. And shopping local means shopping. My new slogan for our market is shopping local means supporting community. And then I would like to thank Mayor Council for inviting McKellar Market tonight, and I really appreciate it, and thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for all that you do, and that things are much more efficient now, as you said, and we'll just get that straightened out. Certainly appreciate it. It is a drawing feature in the whole area, as you know, and people talk about the market, and it's something that you've really... popularized, I guess, and it's put McKellar on the map. That's why I think, and I don't know, we haven't talked it over as council, but certainly it would be nice to promote the whole township and not have it go private. That actually is part of the township, of what they can offer.
Right. I would like to see the future of the McKellar Market always stay a part of the township. Back in the Committee of the Whole on April the 15th, we had some members of the public asked that the market have a committee.
Oh, right.
And my take on that, if you involve a committee, it doesn't have the personal touch that I'm giving it right now.
Yeah.
think it's working. Why break it?
It's working well.
Mm-hmm.
Leave well enough alone.
Yeah.
So if council sees fit to keep me employed, I guess that would be great.
Thanks very much.
That was just a little humor. Carly, don't put that in the minutes.
No.
But you're on record. Yeah.
And thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for everything you do.
Now, I'll let you get on to. Sorry about your long night ahead.
We have resolution 23-116, moved by Councilor Haskell, seconded by Councilor Ryland. Be resolved, the Council of Corporation of the Township of Gelderland is hereby rise and report to the committee of the whole at
8:16
p.m. and reconvene into regular session. Call the question. All those in favor?
Yeah.
And the whole is carried. We have resolution. Thank you.
Good night, guys.
Resolution 23-117, moved by Councilor Ryland, seconded by Councilor Haskell. Be it resolved that the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McCullers hereby approve the minutes of the January 24th, 2023 regular meeting of Council as circulated. Any discussion of those minutes? All the questions, all those in favor? Not opposed, Gary.
Sorry, what was that resolution number?
117.
Thank you.
We have for planning matters a letter dated January 27, 2023 from J.L. Richards regarding resolution 23-93 and also an example of the pre-consultation bylaw. So we have resolution 23-118 moved by Councilor Haskins, seconded by Councilor Ryland. Be it resolved that the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar has hereby received the letter dated January 27, 2023 from J.L. Richards regarding McKellar resolution 23-93. And further, that council receives the example pre-consultation bylaw for information and for further discussion at a later meeting. Open that up for discussion. Councilor Zulak.
In looking over this, there's 20 studies that they're saying that you have to do.
Not half, but
they're saying there's 20, well, I counted, there was 20 different studies, but my understanding is it's not in our official plan, right? We don't have to do them, but I mean, that's ridiculous. That's just shutting down development. 20, all those different studies for people, like who could even afford to do that stuff? It's crazy. Like, how much is one study, like an environmental study? What is that? Could be, you know, quite expensive.
So you're on to the second part of
the
pre-consultation.
Mm-hmm.
And could we maybe deal with the first part? First of all, whether we want them, they're talking about the actual application being declared complete. This
right.
is before studies are even
right,
considered.
Right, right, right.
And We're getting different opinions from the public on that too. What is the complete application? When is it declared? When does it actually start? The clock ticking. And we have one member from the public here with an opinion, and we just received another opinion, I think everyone did, from another member of the public. And they may not necessarily be copacetic, so we'll hear both sides maybe from the public. And then council will have to decide too, because the planners are offering a suggestion that they can help us without this whole process. And we have to decide, since we had a resolution that council will make the final decision whether an application is complete, they're suggesting that if that's the route we want to take, we have to be aware of timelines and dates that are established, and that they would be willing to help with that at a fee. So if council has no problem with it, it'll open to the public first of all and get their opinions, and then we can hear both sides. We also have the other comment, as I said, from another ratepayer who couldn't attend tonight, but sent an email. I'm not sure if Rich wants to speak to it or not.
Oh, everybody got a copy of my email, I guess.
Yeah, just highlight it. Yeah.
Cool thing, I don't think.
No, just highlight.
So I guess the only question I have is that Davis did copy me on his email to council, too. I have a copy of that.
Oh, okay, good.
I read a copy of that. And I'm not sure too sure just where we differ other than the what I concluded at the end, and he didn't have the same conclusion. I think everyone else was pretty well the same, was it not?
Well, my question, I guess, was the whole pre-consultation requirement.
Oh, well, yeah, he thought that was a good idea.
Right.
I don't, if your planners are going to, township planners are going to do the administrative report as part of the thing for the pre-consultation and that, then we're not going to be further ahead, as far as I'm concerned. They seem to negate the fact to read things right. They don't want to read the official plan. They don't want to even read the planning act, so...
That's our present planners, is that?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, like if they can't even read the Planning Act and interpret it properly, like they said right in their letter that section 3410.4 of the Act begins upon the receipt of the application and required fees. Well, no, it doesn't. It has to be a complete application. It doesn't just begin on the receipt of the application. It has to be a complete application because it goes on to say that it has to comply with 10.1 and 10.2 of the Act as well, which says that it has to meet all information and all materials. So that's all the studies in the official plan. Some properties may need one study, some may not need none, some might need 10, who knows?
Yeah.
They're all there. You just have to read through it and decide what studies they need. There's nothing saying you have to do all those studies. It just depends on what your application is.
Now, you also had the comment, I think, that we do things through the Committee of the Whole and not accept the fee at the start?
Well, all three things have to be, or two things I guess really have to be done, is that the application has to be received and all the information received and the fees paid.
Right.
In order for the clock to start ticking. So if you receive the application, the staff looks it over, does an administrative report or staff report, and gives their recommendation of what studies are needed under the Planning Act or under the official plan, and then that goes to a Committee of the Whole, and then any public can come to that Committee of the Whole meeting and comment on it. You still haven't even started the clock ticking yet. You've met all the requirements under the Planning Act to that date, and then you've actually had a public meeting in the Committee of the Whole. Now, once the council and the public feel they've received everything, then you can, the office could call the applicant and say, pay your fee, we're ready to move ahead. So then the clock starts ticking for your 30 days, 90 days, 120 days, whatever it might be. And then you have your public meeting and that for the zoning amendment.
Right. My question is, not that we've run into this before, but what if they say at that point that, you know, you've done all this work and the fee's not paid?
You mean the applicant walks
right
away?
Right.
Well, the only work you have is the township office has received the application and done their review to see what's required under the official plan. That's the end of the work, other than the council meeting.
Right.
But I know I'm working for free. Sure, he's not working for free.
Oh, yeah. No question. I guess the question is, how detailed can the staff get in some of these, deciding on what studies are required, and would they be able to do it on their own without planning advice? Like, we have no certified planner on staff.
No. Well, it's a simple thing as reading the official plan. All you have to do is read through the official plan.
Well, except
for say it's a waterfront property that's asking for a rezoning. So then really all you have is Section 5, Section 7, and Section 9 of the official plan. That's it.
Yeah, the thing is, in the official plan,
nothing else would apply.
Where it talks about a complete application, there were four or five clauses on that, and any other studies that may be required.
Right.
That's why I'm wondering, it leaves it wide open. And then who determines what other studies are required?
Yeah, I have no idea what that would ever be. I don't know. You'd have to look through some history, I guess, to see if other places are asking for other studies. I don't know what they would be.
Well, that leads me back to Councilor Zulak's question. There's quite a long list that was provided of studies that could be done. So they could be included in that other possible studies. And I guess that's a question. Who determines? At what stage and what level of expertise do we need?
I think my own comment on that would be that I, I think staff or council would be foolish to sway from their official plan. If it's not in the official plan, I don't know why you would look at it, because the people, or the applicant, has the right to appeal those requested studies to the Ontario Land Tribunal as not being reasonable.
No, I'm not disagreeing.
That's part of the Planning Act, too. You know, like, you have the right to appeal it to the Ontario Land Tribunal because the township's asked for too much.
Right, except that the clause is in there for what is complete application. I've got it. I think you're aware of it.
Yeah.
Any other studies?
Materials and any other studies, yes.
Right. So I don't know how they would succeed at the Land Tribunal by saying that we didn't have to do this study because the township said you may have to do other studies.
It says reasonable, so I don't know. I guess it's not reasonable. Like I said, I don't know why the council or staff would sway from the studies that are in the official plan.
I'm not disagreeing, except that it is rather, in some cases, it's getting more and more complicated because the land itself is not as desirable in many cases as it used
right.
to be.
Right.
And so there are exceptions and different rules. You have to bend a bit or find other ways of doing things. And that's what I wonder, is it putting too much, emphasis too much on council to make decisions without planning backgrounds as well? I'm just asking.
Again, my only answer would be if it's good planning, that background that you're getting, yes. But if it's not, well then...
Right. again, just for clarification, because... the other idea came in for the pre-consultation and the whole procedure that could be set up. And I guess the one question I had on it, this came from our planner as well, that you need an OPA before you can do a pre-consultation because it's not in there. And I guess the question is, first of all, we can't do our own OPAs. And if you open it up to the province, they'd have to come in and approve it. And then what else could be opened up? Do you think it's wise to go the pre-consultation route if we need an OPA?
I should say no. I'm not sure where the planners are reading that you have to have an OPA amendment. I don't see it anywhere, but because it's not in your official plan. But I haven't read where you don't have to either. So.
Right.
if you did open up the official plan to that amendment, then you're going to have to amend the whole official plan for OPA 9 that's only had the two readings. Now that the third reading was repealed on, the province is going to make it bring it up to the, I believe it's the 2020 PBS.
Yeah.
So you're going to have to do anything that they say is required at that point, which eventually is going to have to be done anyway.
Right.
I wouldn't say it would be wise to open up the OPA or the OPA amendment just for the pre-consultation.
No.
And that's only, the way I understand it is, that's only to make the pre-consultation mandatory.
Right.
There is an option of making it optional to the applicant, just to make it easier for them.
Right.
You can do that at any time if you want. You just...
Pass the bylaw.
Pass the... I'm not sure if you...
I think a bylaw would be the way to go.
Yeah, and then you could have a fee and the fees and charges for it, for pre-consultation. If you wanted a fee for it.
Well, the sample is set up, I think the fees are right in there. I don't know whether that's part of the fees and charges, whether it's just part of the bylaw. And I know what you're saying. You know, where they show up, I don't know.
But most of them are fees, I think, are under the fees and charges bylaw.
Okay. That would make sense.
Unless, I don't know whether the building code fees are or not. I'm not sure.
Councillor Zulak had a question. Give me back to your number of studies you wish now.
No, it's okay. I don't know if it's changed for us, but I know some townships, they don't have to go to municipal affairs to do an official plan amendment. They can do it themselves. Do we know if McKellar can do that yet?
No.
We still can't?
No, there's a list. I looked it up at one point. It's legislated, and Whitestone can. I believe McDougall can. Strong Township, I think, can. There's some in the area, but...
But they haven't put McKellar on it
yet? No. And I don't know for a fact that there were any strings attached to amalgamation that took place a number of years ago. I can't.
Well, from my understanding, I remember seeing that letter, and they said because we split the, was it OPA7 between Waterfront, we did it in two sections, that's why that we weren't put on the list.
Well, I'm not aware of that at all.
Yeah, and I could find that letter, but so we can't do our own OP amendments.
Well, I'm not sure. Get council's views on this. I'm not sure any opinions or any resolutions can be passed tonight. I think it was to get public input and council input. And
just to finish what I said, the only reason I called the title was just to I felt that was a good way to streamline it.
Correct.
And what I've seen in the most recent applications is that the process we have, as you know, it goes to the planners. The planners do a planning report, and it's just completely flawed. So you're just going around and around in circles and costing the applicants more money and costing the township more money. Mm-hmm. So at least this way, you get the application and you get a chance for everybody to review it. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. You've done everything that the Planning Act requires.
It's just
you have 30 days after you receive the application to make a decision, even if it is a complete application or not. So
right.
All you have to do is fill it in that 30 days.
Yeah, my only concern is, I guess, if it goes down the road, as some of them have, to the OLT, they don't have an awful lot of faith in council making decisions. They tend to want a professional planner to give an opinion there.
Yeah.
And whether that's right or wrong, at some point, I think that's why you need the professional advice. Just to back you, and even if the planner just stamps what you're approving already.
Well, I'm not saying you don't get the plan opinion.
You still
get it after the council and the public have made the decision.
Right.
Then you say to the planner, can you give us a planning opinion? This is what it is.
And I was going to say, if it differs from what you decided, I don't know where we are.
Well, I would think they're going to rubber stamp it because they don't want to seem to even look at the official plan.
No.
So.
Yep.
Council
is right.
So, we're saying if we put in a bylaw?
Well, that bylaw is set up. It's Carly's working on that for pre-consultation. And I don't know where.
But not following all these things that they're saying. It's just more or less going, getting them in, talking to them, tell them what they need and everything, and then not accepting a fee until everything council has looked at it, sees everything's in place, and then you're saying send it off to a planner and see if that.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether everything's hanging on this fee or not, because by the sounds of it, that doesn't start the clock ticking either if you accept the fee. It has to be a complete application.
Yes.
So
you would say the application after we got everything, you know, they understood and we understood what we wanted. We got, say, an opinion from the planner. And then so the application we say is complete, right? And they have everything.
Within the time limit that you have.
Yeah. And then so then you collect the fee. And then that's when the clock starts ticking, right? Mm-hmm.
Because there may be pressure at some point that you're not saying it's complete, and they may argue that it is. So that's when you run into a bit of a crunch. Rich?
Just as an example, whenever I was working, I think Chris does now, maybe, but whenever I was working, I never collected the permit fees until after I reviewed the application.
That's why we're broke.
I think Laura can probably attest to that. You know, like, I'd always get the plans in and look at the application, and then I would say what the fee is.
Yeah.
Now it's a little bit different, and because the fee's calculated from the plans and that. But
yeah.
Like, I did all the work before I collected any money. Not all the inspection, but all the work on the process and the permit.
Right.
Did you ever have anybody refuse to pay the fee?
No.
Didn't think so, but yeah.
No, and I really was never hardly ever questioned on it.
So did you tell them what the fee was up front?
Not until after I reviewed the application and the plan.
But that's where we might be running into some trouble, that they don't know the fees up front.
Yeah.
Well, you can tell them what the fee is up front. You just say, we don't want it right now.
Right.
We won't pay it until after we tell you the application is complete.
Yeah, okay.
The fees are set for this.
Yeah.
And they still sign the application saying they have to cover all costs.
Right.
That's part of the application.
Okay. Anything else on that?
The only thing I can think of is that David's never even... I sent him a copy of that, too.
Oh, okay. I wondered. It just seemed coming out of the blue, so I wasn't...
Yeah, sorry. I sent it to him about a week ago, and I thought he wasn't going to say nothing. And then I got the email from him today. Yeah. So I sent him a copy of what I sent council. And the only thing I can think of, the reason he doesn't agree with me on what I put at the end there, because he never even commented on it,
no.
Other than the consultation part, is because it's kind of sidestepping the Planning Act.
Right, yeah. He holds that in the right hand.
Yeah. But I see no problem with that. I don't see how it's wrong.
No, it's practical. That's the thing. It's...
Yeah.
Well, we have a few things to clear up in procedure, certainly, so appreciate your input. Anything else from council on that?
No.
Okay, we're receiving. I've read the resolution. I call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried.
And, Carly, I can certainly go through the Planning Act and send you all the sections that I feel are applicable to studies in that. Because it's here and there and everywhere.
Yep.
But like I said, for rural areas, it's in Section 8, for waterfronts, in Section 7, most of it.
No, I think at some point, too, we're certainly going to have to look at OPA 9 and where we're sitting there. And the 95-12, they just can't sit in limbo forever. So.
No, at some point, probably the first time that you have to go to the province for whatever they're going to say, listen, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
Because you have to remember there was an appeal before the Ontario Land Tribunal that was dropped because the third readings were dropped on both of them.
Right.
So... And it may even come from the public that had the appeals. I haven't heard that, but it could.
Yeah. Well, we haven't done any budgeting yet.
Yeah.
I know when those plans we've done in the past, they can add up pretty quickly.
Yeah. It's just at the time that was the only logical way to do it, I felt, was to revoke the third reading of those. There was no other logical way to do it. It's just going to cost way too much money.
Yeah. Well, appreciate your input.
Okay, I think I'm done.
On to committee board minutes with recommendations for approval. I have the Recreation Committee minutes of January 26, 2023. Resolution 23-119, moved by Councillor Ryland, seconded by Councillor Haskam. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the minutes of the January 26, 2023 meeting of the Township of McKellar Recreation Committee. Discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? Not opposed? Carried. And staff report. And recommendations for approval. 17.1, Fire Department 2023-04, the adjustment of the MNRF agreement area for McKellar. Resolution 23-120, moved by Councillor Haskam, seconded by Councillor Ryan. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive report FD-2023-04, the adjustment of the MNRF agreement area for McKellar. And further, the Council does hereby approve the amended agreement to include new areas of coverage at a cost of approximately $4,700. To the township. Discussion? These areas seem reasonable where MNRF will probably be able to get into them, but the township couldn't. And I guess again, we rely on the fire chief telling us that we don't have the equipment to deal with those areas.
No, I think that's reasonable. That's minimal.
Right.
I know there's areas that I wouldn't want to be on the fire department trying to get to, so that's a good compromise. Yeah, so if the fire department feels they can reach all those areas, they would at some point.
Yeah. All questioned then? All in favor? None opposed? Carried. On to correspondence for consideration for Sunday Area Chamber of Commerce. We have Resolution 23-121, moved by Councillor Ryan, seconded by Councillor Haskin. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the Parry Sound Area Chamber of Commerce 2023 budget. and financial statements as of October 31st, 2022 for information purposes. Discussion?
I was at the chamber board meeting last night, and one of the things that they agreed to do was increase their member fees by $50 per category, and they have about five different categories by name. I don't think I brought those papers with me, but because obviously at the moment they're looking at a deficit, so they're actively looking at lots of other ways to generate more income and things, and there was a number of other things discussed. I don't know that they're close to any of those things, but the fee thing is at least something they can do, basically, because it goes right across. But I know they have 200 members at the moment, and at an average of an extra $50. Now, you pay for a year, you know, starting today, and so that they all cycle through. You know, they're not due at a particular point in time, but I mean, over a year, I guess that would generate a chunk of money anyhow. But I mean, it's still a deficit position because of a number of things, and they've added new staff in the last year, but I've seen a pronounced difference. Prior to being on council, I did some work for the chamber, I guess would be 3 or 4 years ago, on a number of things, basically on collecting fees because they weren't very good at doing that, and all the rest. But I see quite a pronounced difference now. And Chris McDonald, who was here last meeting and things, I think has done a great job of getting out there and talking to people. And a lady named Catherine LaPierre, who does membership services and things, has done some great things that way too. So coincidentally, they were looking at a salary increase that they've been, that's obviously their big expense that's increased a lot for Catherine, because when they hired her, they basically paid her at the low end of a scale. I don't know that they had an official scale, but anyhow, and that was a big discussion. So anyway, but yeah, it's lots of things to deal with anyhow, but I think they are, and they're taking conscious efforts to you know, look for other streams of revenue. So we had a presentation from a lady from, if I'm right, North Bay, it could be wrong, but I mean, with a plan that would offer perks to chamber members as a means of driving revenue and things. But it looked like a pyramid scheme to me, but what the heck, if it works. And that's unfair to say that. It seemed quite dodgy to me anyhow, but they seemed quite receptive to it, the board did, and things. So I think they'll go forward with that. And I think that I give them credit. You know, they got an issue with money, so they have to find a way to get more. So I think they're doing that.
Are they still meeting by Zoom, or do they meet?
No, it was in person. That was their first in-person meeting, I understand, since before the pandemic. So that's quite a thing and everything else. And they don't have a very big office. I don't know if you've ever been there. It's on William Street, kind of tucked away next to the beer store, or not right beside, but close to there. And there was, I don't know, 14 or 15 of us sitting there, sitting absolutely everywhere, backwards, frontwards, and everything else, and looking. So it was interesting anyhow. And I know a few members there, or a few board members there, but not a lot of others. So,
now that room is rented then, or are you not sure?
No, it's rented for sure.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know what else is in that building. It's an innocuous little building, but I mean, I knew where it was because, again, when I was working for them before, when I say working, I wasn't being paid, or I was doing work for them. That's where they were based out of too, and I spent lots of days in there asking questions, going like, who does? They had multiple billing systems, and it was just chaos at that time. So they seemed to have fixed that, which is a good thing. And they could tell me all kinds of really interesting things about, you know, what their analysis of their members indicated. And they have a list of new members each month, and a list of new prospects and things. And so I think they've got it under control and on the track anyhow. So I was impressed. It was quite different than my previous experience. So
good. Other questions? I'll call the question. All those in favor? Not opposed? Carried. Under the Biosphere EV Charger Incentive Program, Resolution 23-122, moved by Councillor Haskin, second by Councillor Ryland. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of Cutters hereby received the email dated January 24, 2023 from Benjamin John of the Georgia Bay Biosphere regarding EV charging station funding opportunities. Discussion.
I know this has come up to previous councils. I wasn't on council at the time, and I've heard stories about what happened with those, but I have my number two son is involved in the e-vehicle industry. That's his full-time job. He's the director of e-vehicles for a company that provides support to original equipment manufacturers, so the big companies, the big three for sure, and others. I asked him about this, and in terms of the costs and things like that, and which, if we were to do this, which models and things. I think they had three or four. I don't have it in front of me at the moment, but and he exchanged quite a lot of information. I mean, this is what he does for a living. He's done great there and been promoted. He's a director there now, and just one level below a VP, and runs the whole show for them. But if we're interested, and that's an if, I mean, he volunteered to come and make a presentation and walk through things, and given his job and his background, he's an automotive engineer to boot, but it's a big thing. I think, I mean, I heard it tonight from the Biosphere people too, and I didn't expect that, but having said that, I mean, I should have expected that, I guess, but I think there is an opportunity. I know there was some issues with the last time this came up before council. I don't know any of those things firsthand, and I don't know if others do. I'd be happy to listen to concerns. I think there's an opportunity to do this here. Do it for profit, frankly, for the township, is to be able to sell EV charging to people and make money doing it and provide an opportunity. I think amongst West Parry Sound municipalities, we're uniquely located on a corridor that has a lot of east-west traffic. And therefore we would be likely to have people using it simply because they're going by the area. The downside in terms of the economic, the collateral benefits that we would get are minimal, because of course if you were here today charging your car, I mean, and you were out there right now, I mean, other than sitting in the parking lot, I don't know what else you would do. Other periods of the year, other times of day and things would be better, but I think everything starts somewhere, and for a potentially minimal cost, we could try out and see what happens. And I'm not really sure that I understood what Becky was talking about with for the Biosphere. Maybe we would qualify. I know this is a grant, but I mean, possibly for some other help and things to get this done too. I would consider, and again, I don't know what happened before, I would consider that, I mean, the township location itself is ideal, being right on 124. If we put it at the far end of the parking lot from here, that seems like an opportunity to me, you know, where there are parking spots in any event, and let people pull in there and plug. Like I said, the downside is, in order to get a community economic benefit, there would have to be people that would get out of their car and walk somewhere and do something, and, you know, during the summer, maybe, but I mean, in the winter.
Yeah, no, I wasn't part of the past either, but I listened to it, and I certainly wouldn't want to go through that personally when the previous council went through with the two or three opportunities that were suggestions that were made. Maybe people who experienced it firsthand. Councillor Haslam, I think you were going to say something before Maria.
I still think, as far as the UV chargers, especially along the 124 corridor, has to be a larger plan than what McKellar is going to come up with, whether it's through GBB or more regional, but to determine where they should be, you know, because there's no sense us going the cost, put one in than Whitestone does, right at the Duck Rock, which people are going to stop there because they can grab some food and eat and, you know, kill some time.
And that
may make our
vehicle, that'd be cute, but yeah, okay.
Yeah, so ours would sit stagnant. So I think it has to be more of an overall plan. So at this point where we're at, I don't think I'd be in favor of putting any of our money into it. That's
okay.
I just it's coming down the road. I just don't think we're there yet to start taxing our ratepayers, and as Nick says, there may be a revenue at some point. I don't think that's going to happen in the next 10 years for McKellar.
Well, it's interesting too, because I looked in the Parry Sound, and they've got a lease agreement with Lakeland Holding, rather interesting, at the Stocky Center and at the Bobby Orr Center. Lakeland is doing everything. They're putting in the actual stations themselves, and Parry Sound's mm-hmm. not doing it. Well, they're making sure that there's a vacant parking space there for somebody, but they're not involved in the actual installation of the costs. It's Lakeland Holding footing the bill. And I didn't see any of that happening in the previous applications that came through council, so that's another consideration, but I have yet to see that. And this doesn't indicate that that's what they would do. But even with Perry Sound, when you think there's a number of private businesses that are offering it, I understand. But these are on public property, but it's all through a lease like we had with Cogeco. They can put up the building and their towers and provide us with the, well, I won't get into all of that, but with all of the free
provide
internet.
Provide us with nothing, but yeah.
Yeah, anyway, so. So it was sort of a quid pro quo. Councillor Kekkonen, I think you were going to...
Well, I can say a lot about this.
No, not too much.
But I think you know, it's interesting you mentioned Lakeland Holding, because they do have a stake in operations here in McKellar Township, so that if we wanted private enterprise to entertain something and take on the whole project, hey, I think that that's something that council may consider. But we were advised by hundreds of our ratepayers that they don't want a penny of their tax dollars spent on installing a EV charging station. They felt that public enterprise, private enterprise could pursue something like this, because it's a whole venture because of the time that it requires for charging. So a restaurant location would be ideal for something like this, where you have washroom facilities and opportunity for food. And who knows, you know, maybe EVs will not be the way of the future. You know, there's hydrogen powered vehicles where there's not the devastation of environmental impact of mining the cobalt and lithium. So this may change in 2 years from now. So if private enterprise wants to venture on this and expend their dollars on it, go for it.
Solar is just starting. I've been reading a little bit on that too, where you may start seeing solar powered vehicles coming out. So yeah,
so things can change quite rapidly. So
okay, any other comments? We're just receiving this, so call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. On to Municipality McDougall Resolution, Perry Sound Area Schools. Resolution 23-123, moved by Councillor Ryden, second by Councillor Haskam. Be it resolved, the Council of Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby support Municipality of McDougall Resolution Number 2023-09. Whereas McDougall and Nobel Public Schools currently provide a safe rural community learning environment for the municipalities of McDougall, Carling, McKellar, the Archipelago North, and the Shawnigaw First Nation. And whereas Perry Sound High School, PSHS, currently serves the West Perry Sound area as a regional high school. Whereas all three schools are currently located in central locations to serve their respective catchment areas very well and provide community hubs in the current locations. And whereas all three schools are in need of major upgrading or replacement. And whereas the current Near North District School Board, NNDSB, proposal to replace all three schools as a single building, including portable classrooms on a single site for JK to 12, does not have the support of the community and was based on a flawed and outdated Accommodation Review Committee, ARC, process from 2013. And whereas no building design can overcome the inherent poor safety and learning environment for the elementary students, and whereas numerous recent lockdowns at the PSHS demonstrate the potential for risk if elementary students had been present in the same building, and whereas a single site does not provide the community hub functions that benefit the education process for elementary students, now therefore be it resolved that the NNDSB abandon the current proposal that has been delayed for the past 10 years. And further be it resolved that the NNDSB, with support and proper input from the parents of the students affected and local municipal governments, replace Nobel and McDougall Public Schools with at least one new elementary school in McDougall and a new high school in the town of Perry Sound. Discussion?
Amen. I have two school-age grandchildren that go to these schools, and I couldn't agree more. So, and my daughter-in-law would kill anybody that said otherwise. So.
Yeah, there are things probably in the resolution that don't necessarily agree with everything, but I see what they're trying to do, and it's unfortunate because we've got this far. It was a council or two ago, I guess, actually had representatives sitting on the ARC, and there were people who supported the JK to 12 school. And since the design has come out since, these hubs that they're talking about really look like portables. And I think think this is now with it's coming home to roost. They're seeing that what they supported before, probably not what they envisioned. And it's, of course, the big push right now is that it's not big enough because of the influx of people into the area. And that it's just going to have to be add-ons or more portables added in the future as the population grows. So they certainly have a concern. McDougall wanted McDougall. I'm not sure where. They didn't say in the resolution whether it stay at the present location or move somewhere else. I'm not sure what their plan is. But
yeah, that's the only scary part of the motion I've seen is yeah. One McDougall. Does that mean shut the McDougall school down and have the one in Nobel?
Right. That's so, possible, yeah.
You're going to have this families fighting with each other. The whole process is just ridiculous. It's this is going on and on.
Yeah, since 2010.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the site at McDougall School there, it's enormous. Like the potential is just wonderful there. Like put a new school in there. Like I just, it's got to be budgeted for and build their new high school also, which is needed.
Yeah. So
hopefully they can agree and start getting something done.
With a pool attached. Oh, I guess that's not happening. No.
Well, that would have been, yeah, that would have been a good plan too. But unfortunately, that's a whole other thing.
Further discussion on this one? Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Here. Township of Carling Committee and the Board Appointments. Resolution 23-124. Moved by Councilor Zulak, second by Councilor Keckman. Be resolved, Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive Township of Carling Resolution to appoint representatives to the Parry Sound District Municipal Association Executive, the Parry Sound Emergency Services Advisory Committee, and the District Social Services Administration Board. Discussion? It's as I said before, and I certainly we held off on these because Carling was still they hadn't named anybody, and I received a phone call from Mayor Robinson, in effect telling me before I even had the communication that Carling was supporting McDougall's resolutions for the representatives on the EMS and the and DSAT, and then we received the communication now. So obviously, lobbying took place, as we talked about before, and it's unfortunate again. There was a long discussion. I talked about representation and Al McKellar, I went right back to the early welfare board with DSAT in particular, and how it switched over and that it should be on a rotational basis, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But we're in a situation now, I think, the way it's been done in the past, unless faces change around the table. The same procedures being used, and I don't know exactly when the lobbying occurs, but it's unfortunate that it works that way and they're not seeing a fair sharing. I did mention for DSAB in particular that we would want reports from the representative, and the question was, well, some townships want those and others don't seem to care. As long as there's somebody there, they don't care about the reports, so wait for DSAB to send something out. So if we want to move that going forward, depending on how we deal with the future resolutions, who we support, then we would need a resolution to say that we want quarterly reports or half-yearly reports or whatever. Whether it be a presentation or just a report, I'm not sure. But that way, I remember when I sat on DSAB, that was required. Whitestone and Carling both wanted reports, so we actually traveled at that point well before COVID and visited the townships and did a presentation on behalf of McDougall and McKellar were representatives at that time. So we can ask for that if we wish, but whether that be done at this meeting or in the future, that's fine. And I think he did seem agreeable to that, but as long as that's put into writing that it's what's expected, then the representative would do that. We'll call the question on this one. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. The 2023 Good Roads Conference. Resolution 23-125, moved by Councilor Zulak, seconded by Councilor Keckman, be resolved the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the conference notice and agenda for the 2023 Good Roads Conference, and further that the following persons be authorized to attend with all applicable expenses incurred to be paid by the Township. And the name is Director of Operations Greg Gostick, and anybody else you wish to name. If you think it's worthwhile, and we do have the agenda this time, unlike the previous situation. There are a couple of things on there, asset management items, I think could be useful. And it does talk about various paving techniques. I know much of it is geared to the urban setting. But and the other thing I notice, of course, is the Sunday and the Wednesday seem to be more for administration and people who are already part of Good Roads. So it looks to me like Monday and Tuesday are the actual meat of the conference. We can go to different plenary, different workshops. But I'm not sure what Greg would be expecting, whether he wants paid for the full time that he's there. And it is a chance to meet other director of operations and all that. I'm not sure, too. I can't remember if they mentioned any of the guest speakers. I guess certain ones are invited.
Yeah, that's what I said a number of times. So here is invited, right? To political leaders, by the look of it, although.
Yeah.
Cool.
Questions?
Certainly, we'll want an update on the future of the gas tax, right. Particularly when there's this push for anything other than fossil fuel-consuming vehicles. It's a substantial amount that all the municipalities receive and is overseen by the AMO, and certainly like to have full disclosure on what the future is going to hold regarding the gas tax.
So we would hope there'd be a report back after this conference, if it's approved, that you inform us. I'm not sure. Some of these conferences I've found in the past, they end up on the internet anyway, the actual presentations, and you can access them that way. But you don't have the personal input at that point. It's already happened.
How much is it?
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask.
I don't know.
See it on here.
It's not cheap.
No, I figured that.
I don't know whether Carly has the final figures. I would think you're probably looking at somewhere around $1,500 to $2,000 before you're done.
But oh, yeah.
That's one person. And then years back, 1 year, I think we had two people go, and that was quickly quashed, reduced to one person. So. And the reports were questionable. But not to name names. So any other comments on that? I think it's good for, I think too, we're in a small community, certainly, and you don't meet that many people on a regular basis, and maybe get some ideas, as long as, you know, you don't bring in a lot of the urban ideas that we can't afford, and then maybe we don't need, so. But I don't think Greg, I think he seems well-grounded in our community and what we require and what we can afford.
Yeah, I think there'll be some information there. And yeah, he'll be rubbing shoulders probably with the other local directors of operation around here. And yeah, get out there and have some conversation. Should be good.
So did Greg mention which ones he wanted to go to, or the
no,
whole thing?
He had a look at the agenda. He didn't mention what days.
Okay, any further questions? I'll call the question then. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. The Ombudsman Report of Resolution 23-126, moved by Councilor Zulak, seconded by Councilor Keckman. Be resolved that the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the Ombudsman Report dated January 2023 by Paul Dubay for the investigation into complaints about meetings held for the Township of McKellar on August 24th, August 31st, and September the 9th, 2021, and April the 12th, 2022, for information purposes. Discussion? I think it's very telling, and I really think we've been proactive in anticipating, because we experienced this from a distance, some of us, the problems that were encountered. And I think many of them have been dealt with, if not all, in our new procedural bylaw. But it's interesting for the opinions and the recommendations in particular, pages 10 and 11, because for the opinions, all four meetings, it says that the council had contravened the open meeting rules, no exceptions. So there's no exoneration like we've heard in the past of council doing everything properly, because it wasn't done properly. And the recommendations going forward, as I said, we've anticipated many of them. We did the correct thing by stopping the meeting when they ran into trouble in December, and we didn't have access to the Zoom because it was promised to them. So the meeting ended, and they're recommending that that's how it be done. And they're also talking about the notices of meetings, which again is enshrined in the new procedural bylaw. If you read the actual notices, it talks about the Friday now, everything being available to the public, and even for the closed sessions, things being provided 3 days, business days prior to. So I think we've covered off. The only thing they've asked for is a response in some way, I guess. I'm not sure. I think they had a rider on it. They want something from the township, maybe to the effect, just what I'm talking about here, what we've done to deal with these particular problems and how we've helped to resolve them. As far as the internet, the Zoom access, we're still working on that. And they don't really have an opinion one way or the other, because they talk about in-person meetings, which we're doing. And that's certainly transparent and acceptable to them as well. Other comments?
It was good to see this out on the website for the public to see. I was glad to see that.
Yeah. No, I think public should see it, certainly, because... well, as I say, if they were experiencing themselves, they knew that there were problems with the connections, and business shouldn't have continued if they couldn't access what was happening. And during thick of times, too, they couldn't even come to an in-person meeting.
No.
And they were relying on the electrical or the technological opportunities.
And this went on for 3 years. With nothing being resolved.
Yeah, it was certainly a concern the way things are being done, and hopefully it's in a better situation now, and you know, we can talk certainly about the service provider at some later time in the meeting perhaps. And but as far as moving forward, if they want a response, we'll do that through the office, I guess, of some way, and I can certainly contribute and explain how we've dealt with many of their concerns.
Yep.
They expressed. So. Any further discussion on that? Mm-hmm. Call your question. All those in favor? Not opposed? Carried. On to motion, notice of motion. 20.1, resolution to amend Schedule A of Bylaw 2000-11, appointing a Deputy Chief Building Official. Resolution 23-127, moved by Councillor Peckman, seconded by Councillor Zulak. Whereas the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar passed Bylaw Number 2000-11 to appoint the Chief Building Official for the Municipality of Whitestone as the Deputy Chief Building Official for the Township of McKellar. And whereas the terms of the appointment may be amended from time to time by a resolution of council with the agreement with the Municipality of Whitestone, now therefore be resolved that the terms of appointment attached to Bylaw Number 2000-11, as Schedule A, are hereby amended as per the attached Schedule A, and further that the 2022 invoice number 2022-28 to the Municipality of Whitestone for shared CBO services be amended to the payment rate as set out in Resolution 17-349, further, that payment of the Municipality Whitestone invoices 45-2022 and 60-2022 be amended to the effective payment rate. And further, that the Municipality Whitestone be requested to provide a copy of the resolution that has been approved at the rate of $45.18 for CBO services. And further, that copy of Bylaw Number 2000-11 and amended Schedule A be sent to the Municipality of Whitestone. And Schedule A to Resolution 2023-127, Pursuant to Section 2 of Bylaw 3000-11, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar hereby amends Schedule H, Bylaw Number 2000-11 as follows. Removing, quote, compensation for services will be paid at the rate of $25 per hour to the municipality of Whitestone. Invoices for services rendered will be submitted to the Township of McKellar on a monthly basis. Mileage charges from the McKellar Municipal Office for field inspections shall be paid by the Township of McKellar directly to the Deputy Chief Building Official upon submission of expense sheets, and that to be, that to be replaced with, quote, compensation for services will be paid at the CBO's wage rate effective the date the service is rendered. Invoices will be submitted to the Township of McKellar on a monthly basis. Mileage charges from the McKellar Municipal Office for field inspections shall be invoiced at the rate of which is current on the date of the inspection, end quote. Discussion? So we assume Municipality of Whitestone will follow through on this. There have been no rumblings, I guess, nothing until they see this, and everything will be taken care of. Mm-hmm. Councilor Supak?
Hopefully.
Oh.
No. Well, we'll hear if they don't agree with it.
Oh, yes.
Nope, looks good on our end.
Okay, call the question then. All in favor? None opposed? Carried. Lake Stewardship Environmental Committee Pollinator Patches, Resolution 23-128, with the Councilor Techman, second to Councilor Zulak. Whereas the Lake Stewardship Environmental Committee asked the Township to provide the committee with possible sites where a 7-foot by 7-foot pollinator patch could be installed on Township property. And whereas the committee has provided the Township with 3 sites where they would like to install the pollinator patches, now therefore be resolved that the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby approve of pollinator patches being installed at Fire Station Number 2, Birdville Road, Hemlock Church, and Lakeside Boat Ramp. Discussion. Councilor Zulak.
Does anyone know for the one that are at Hemlock Church, why they decided to put it there? Why wouldn't they put it on the other side of the church back? Why, like right at the corner there? Does anyone know?
Sorry, like move it to the right, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, like on the over picture? Here. Like why did they go?
I don't think it's used for parking much, but it is used for parking. It's plowed all the time in the winter and things too, that area. Anything to the right side as you look at the picture of the church is plowed out, or there's piles of snow there either way. But at the moment, and in the summer, there was occasionally cars parked there. I think the neighbor across the street parks cars there. But
no, he is.
What?
No, he is.
Well, somebody does that lives right across the street, parks a silver.
That's because I know the neighbor across the street. He doesn't park there.
Well, I see that car in their driveway sometimes, I'll say that much. I've never seen anybody actually put it there, but I see the car there with some frequency. But
no, I'm just wondering because it seems right there.
Councilor Kagan?
I'm thinking the real question here is what is the purpose of these pollinator patches? You know, when you look at a chart on how far pollinators can fly to find food, monarch butterflies can fly 11 to 150 miles. Bumblebees can fly 1 mile. So has there been an inventory done in that area to indicate that there are no food sources for, you know, the specific pollinators in our area that requires this landing area as the stopping place so it can get to the next food source? I think everything that we do needs to be based on information and facts. And, you know, I support green spaces, I support good initiatives like this, but this seems like really a rural, an urban project. And when I looked up the David Suzuki Foundation, they were, you know, based, and I heard a conversation at the committee meeting indicating that there are no rangers in this area with the Suzuki Foundation, and it makes sense because there really is no need for pollinator patches. The inventory of the pollinator food sources for pollinators is everywhere. It's not like we're in a city urban center where everything is paved over, mm-hmm. and there's very limited food sources. you just drive along the side of the road and you look everywhere. There's just a continuous source of food sources. Even here in this, around this, each of these areas, that whole area is a pollinator food source. And I don't believe that this here is really a, you know, if there's, if I could see an inventory indicating that, you know, this is a spot where we require a food source for these pollinators, I'm thinking more so that if it's going to be one of these pollinator patches in these areas, it becomes a landscaping project at the same time. Something that enhances, you know, the aesthetics of each of these locations, such as Hemlock, Fire Station 2, and Lakeshore, Lakeside Boat Ramp. So it becomes an aesthetic project, which can incorporate, you know, a pollinator patch, but it can't be just an untidy section of that is all around that whole area anyways. You know, so it has to be something that's serving a dual purpose in our area as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. Other comments?
Yeah, now that you mention that. Last year when they did the roadside cutting, like look at our ditches, right? Where they cut the roadside cutting, go beyond that to the person's property. There's all kinds of stuff there, and yet they had to go along, and every time they seen a milkweed, they had to not cut it. I mean, like exactly what you said. Look at in the city, the people have their lawns cut right to the edge of the road. Where's the pollinator patches there? I mean, look around here. We're all grass and weeds and all kinds of stuff growing here. Why do we have to have a specific spot for it? There's all kinds of...
Other comments?
Yeah, the only thing, not so much with Lakeside and the fire hall looks there. It's not as big a deal as at the Hemlock Church. Well, we're going to have some work done on it, hopefully, this summer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, bring it right back and make it look good there and everything. I'm just a little concerned about what this will look like plunked out on the lawn. We also have our sign there, which I don't really like the looks of it sitting there either, but it's there. So I'm concerned about what this is going to look like and whether they can hold off for another year until at least the work is done and... on that site.
So in that case at Hemlock, that would be an opportunity to modify the look of that sign, is that you have this aesthetic component to that location where the sign is, that it becomes a pollinator patch, but it actually becomes a landscaping enhancement for that that lot. I think this really has to be a dual purpose, where it's actually enhancing the aesthetics of these locations, and secondly, it's a pollinator patch, because I think an inventory of pollinator food sources is primary to justify that there is a lack of food for the pollinators.
Okay. Final comments?
I can ask the members of the committee to provide more information on that, and you know, do it by our next month, maybe not by our next meeting if it's next week, but the month beyond that, anyhow. And I'm no expert on any of these things. I have sat through brief presentations on it anyhow, but I support doing it. I don't think it interferes with anything, and I don't think there was any expected cost to the township anyhow for doing this. I don't recall that anyhow. I don't know if anybody else does, but this would be volunteer managed and things like that in terms of the planting and what was in it. I'm unclear, Mike, in terms of, are you thinking that this was being built as a migratory thing, like to pick up migrating insects? Because I don't think that was ever an issue. I think it was simply for local insects, if I was to say that, and all my terms are very rudimentary, and I admit that. But
when you read about pollinator patches, basically what they're referring to is that it becomes sort of a jumping point for the pollinator to move from the where there's no food source to the next food source.
Okay.
And when you just do a visual inventory, there's no lack of green space or food sources or jump off spots for pollinators in our area of the province and in McKellar Township. Everywhere you drive, it's just a continuous food source for pollinators. Everywhere you walk, even in the bush, you will see it's an unlimited food source for pollinators. And, you know, I think there has to be an inventory indicating that, you know, this pollinator is lacking, or it requires an additional jump-off spot because, you know, the leaf cutter bee can only fly a maximum of 1,500 feet for the next food source. And we can show here that there's actual lack of, you know, food source for that pollinator.
Sure.
So everything has to be based on some type of data or facts. You know, it's the same as the bluebird project that the one conservation group do. They do a thorough inventory of all the bluebird boxes. They show that there's, you know, data to show that it has increased the population, that they're having a very good success with the project. I think that's part of any project, is to start off with, you know, the basic facts of, you know, what is the inventory, and to indicate that this is a great location because there's no food source for these pollinators, and it's required there, so...
Well, that's interesting, because they'd actually changed the name. It didn't start as Pollinator Patch. Like, that changed partway through. They had another name for it.
You're right. I don't remember the earlier
name. So maybe, with that new designation, they should be aware of what you found in your research, why they're called that, and what's expected of them. So am I hearing deferral? Am I hearing...
It was called the Butterfly Garden.
That's
before.
It. Yeah, Butterfly Garden.
And we have one here on the community center grounds.
Yeah.
And going by it, it's a nice little piece of art, I guess you could say, but I don't know if I would want that out in the middle of a lawn at the Hemlock
Church.
No,
see, that's sort of back over on
the
bush line.
Yeah, it's set into the bush.
But this is sitting right out in the middle. It's like it's a patch of...
You would want it, like, bordered off with nice material, like... You don't want to drag logs in there and in a square, and I'm a little concerned about it. So whether we want to defer it until get a little more information on how,
just ask for a presentation,
what its purpose is, how it will serve, you know, the insects.
Well, it's up to you whether you want to defer, defeat, carry. So Councillor Keckinen moved it. Councilor Zulak seconded, so what were you expecting when you moved it? Just to put it on the table, I know.
Oh, what a...
Yeah, I searched that particular resolution right out so I could move that.
Yeah. Well, I'm willing to check one of the three boxes here, so... Yeah, you can record a voting if you need.
If we go forward with, I'd like Kellogg Church stroked on it, if it went forward, or it's a deferral and get a little more information, but I'd still like Hemlock Church stroked off it, even in the future, I think.
Defer,
yeah.
Yep, I agree with that.
Okay, it's deferred. I'll call the vote on that, or call the question. All those in favor of deferral? Okay, deferred. So that'll be passed on to the committee, I suppose, and then they can do further research or whatever. Something would be expected of them, I guess, because it was deferred.
Yeah, maybe even a picture of what the finished product may look like. Say, at least with a Hemlock Church, if it looks like something appealing. Hey, wonderful.
Okay, on to 20.3, identification cards for use of the transfer station, resolution 23-129, moved by Councillor Keckinen, second by Councillor Zulak. Be resolved, the Council of Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby direct staff to purchase transfer station identification stickers to repairs vehicle windshield, and further that the stickers be prepared and included with the April tax bills, and further that sticker replacement costs and costs of additional stickers will be at cost. Discussion.
So that's only one sticker per tax?
Well, I think personally it should be two, because some people have two vehicles and...
I think most have two vehicles.
Yeah, they at different times, depending on who's driving or what they're doing, that they might have to take a different vehicle. And if it's a sticker, it's a fixed. You can't move it. If it's a card, you can move that around. But there they're asking for stickers here in the resolution.
And some people take their garbage with the ATV and trailer.
Oh,
yeah.
There's interesting then.
So a special pass for them, I guess it costs, but I would almost think we need two per household. But I know the cost is probably only going to be a few bucks, I guess, or something. And I could pay that too, but...
I like the idea too, I think.
Can I ask why we're doing this? I mean, do we think there's a problem with people using it?
Well, first of all, there is a problem because all kinds of people, this is through the attendant going in and he's not even aware. They don't show cards and you're not even aware of who is there, who's renting, who's an actual resident, and I guess the problem is just increasing. And he can't really officially stop them, I suppose. He can ask them where they're from and whatever, but if there's no proof. And most other places, it is required that you have that, my understanding anyway, some identification sticker if it's required. I stood on mine from when they were first issued, and that's going way back. And then for a number of years, once the attendant gets to, I think it's already in our bylaw even, but once the attendant gets to know people, then he doesn't have to see it necessarily every time. But rather than a card where you have to pull it out, you may be asking for a sticker. It does make more sense in the sense that you just glance at it and you know that it's you're covered. But we certainly have to look at what goes on in the summer in there because of the volume, the people coming and going. I mean, he can't be in one area of the site and then looking at people coming in and their stickers at the same time. So
and that, running the compactors.
Yeah, it's still going to be a problem, but we can deal with that later. It's just something that he has asked for as well to help make his job easier so that he'll know who should be dumping there and who shouldn't.
So
and I have to say, I don't think they've been renewed for years.
So can we change it to two?
Yeah. Well, you know, that's Councillor Pekkanen's motion, so if you two want the amendment, that's...
It doesn't say one, but it just says the stickers, but I mean, close. But I mean, yeah, two would be logical to me.
What people end up doing is taking the sticker and then fixing it to a piece of plexiglass so that you can have it in the windshield of the vehicle and then you can.
If you remember when you leave the house, but yeah,
yeah,
I hear you.
Yeah, those are from. Those were issued in around 1993. Those ones.
Yeah, look at the trying to say the date, but it's all worn off.
What, is it a pink one?
Pink,
yeah,
pink
one. I have one.
I have one too, but I couldn't tell you where it is. But I have one, so
let's not even get into the color.
So we're okay with the sticker as opposed to a card. No problem there. Now the April tax bill. I guess that's a question I have. Because maybe you can answer this for us. That sounds like an awfully big envelope that's coming out because we've got the environmental committee that wants to stuff two things in there.
Yeah.
We've got now the two stickers, if they're even prepared in time. I guess that's the other question, who's going to do those? And then there's something else that was going to be inserted, I think, in the tax bills.
Usually the newsletter.
Oh, the newsletter.
But it's usually
digital
just,
now?
Yeah, so it's just a little piece of paper that indicates that there's a digital newsletter at the township website.
I just want to make sure it could all fit in there without showing to do great.
Yeah, so staff have contacted two companies for quotes on the stickers and provided proofs to them. We're still waiting back on responses, but stickers are very minimal and they don't weigh much, so there wouldn't be any issue putting them in the tax bills.
Okay.
The downside of mailing two to everybody is people that don't have two vehicles may lend or give the other one to somebody else that would not normally be entitled to one. Do you understand? In other words, we create that problem too. As much as I believe, yeah, most places have two vehicles and therefore need two. But I mean, if we provide two to people that only need one, what are they doing with the other one? Right, giving it to a friend or, you know,
replacing the one they lose.
Yeah,
well,
yeah,
there's that too. But if you gave me 10, I still wouldn't have enough if that happened. So
that could happen, like you're mentioning it. But I think it's not going to be happen that much.
Okay.
Probably be a good time to review the transfer station bylaw as well, just to ensure that the wording of the transfer station permit aligns with what we're doing now.
I think it does show in there, it used to anyway, that you're required to show your card to the attendant when you enter.
Yeah.
But whether that's actually done. I don't know. I guess it hasn't been done for quite a while.
No, and the transfer station attendant should be reviewing that bylaw annually.
Yeah, the only thing that came up was the sign itself. And I think, I don't know whether that's...
Yeah, that's the next one.
That's the next one, okay. Because, again, that would be tied in with the bylaw that we have in place and make sure that it corresponds with that. Because I personally had an issue with a previous attendant going back, a few attendants. Won't go back too far. And, but saying that such and such, I couldn't actually leave there because it wasn't in the bylaw. And I said, well, I knew it was in the bylaw because I helped write it. But... It was, I had to come to the office and get it all verified and then go back and talk to him. And it's unfortunate because it was right there in the sign even. But I think if we have it there so people can read it and they know what they can and can't do, I think that helps an awful lot. So we should make sure that it's up to date too and that it's legible. It's very small right now, I know, because there's so much on it. Maybe we need two, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. There were some requirements in the transfer station bylaw of what needed to be on the sign.
Right.
So just we can discuss that next resolution a little more in detail.
Okay, call the question on this one. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Rules, regulations, sign update at the transfer station. Resolution 23-130, moved by Councilor Keckman, seconded by Councilor Zulak. Be it resolved that the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar is hereby direct staff to update and purchase the new rules and regulations sign at the transfer station. Discussion.
Well, I think this is where this discussion comes in, is prior to that happening, the Council reviews the transfer station bylaw.
Yeah, that sounds good. I don't think we need it in the resolution, long since understood that...
Yeah, so it wouldn't hereby direct staff to update and purchase new rules, regulations, sign at the transfer station.
If you want it, it's your resolution.
So, yeah, so that wouldn't take place until
he
after.
He seems to be the cause of our problem tonight, so.
Well, you decide where you want to put
direct staff to update.
Do you have the bylaw number?
Not offhand.
No, okay.
No.
After a review of, or do you want it to come back to council too, or how do you?
We pretty well need to review the bylaw prior to anything taking place with the update and purchase of the new rules and regulations sign at the transfer station.
So after a review, something to that effect.
So most likely defer all that until.
Yeah, we just want to make sure until we get that they have the direction.
Right. Sure.
Because the location of it might need to be changed as well. So.
After council's review of the transfer station bylaw. Take a question and a vote on that. Just question all those in favor of the amendment. One opposed?
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking, I mean, I'm not sure, I have no problem with council reviewing it, but I mean, I don't really want staff to prepare a report on the bylaw and engage the transfer station attendant to get some feedback. Maybe others too, I don't know. That's my only point.
Well, staff won't be doing anything until council makes the next move.
Okay.
way it's working.
Okay.
So that'll be an open public discussion at an open public council meeting reviewing the transfer station bylaw.
Sure, committee of the whole.
Sure, committee of the whole.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
So now we have the consolidated resolution. We'll vote on that. All those in favor? None opposed, carried. Donation grant policy, submission date change. Resolution 23-131, moved by Councilor Zulak, second by Councilor Kekinen, be resolved the Council Corporation of the Township of Keller does hereby direct the staff to prepare a bylaw for the next regular meeting of council to change the donation slash grant policy submission date to and to modify the submission information accordingly. Now, I just wondered with this one, I think the date is what, March, was it right now?
March 1st.
Yeah, and I wondered if we should be looking at that as more in line with our actual, and I know you want some prep, but we won't be discussing the final budget until on into April, probably, or May, before it's even passed. And I'm wondering if that would give people a bit more time when the new year comes around. Suddenly it's there, they don't realize that I should have applied for a grant. And I wonder if that could be extended to April 1st or other dates you might have in mind. And not only that, but I think the suggestion was made at last council that the submission form itself have some dates on it so that people are aware of you know, the timeline, what they have to meet, and what the requirements are.
Yeah, in my opinion, quite frankly, the whole, all the papers that we have here should go with the application. Otherwise, it just creates a bottleneck when they have to come back later and ask, right? So I don't think there's anything in the policy itself that can't be given to members of the public.
But no, it's public information, you're right.
So why not just share it, other than the bylaw itself, perhaps, but and even then I don't have a problem, but you know, there's just superfluous information on the cover. But
the one question I know came up last time too was the it's on the second page, I guess, of the policy itself, the bottom capital projects. They were turned down immediately because they didn't fit the criteria. Mm-hmm. And I know there was at least one request.
There was.
And I don't know what, maybe those who helped create this would give an indication of why that was included. Is that something they should be raising on their own? Was that the idea? This is just to help them along if they need a donation or a grant in a certain area, but not to actually build something?
I'm thinking that staff had gleaned this policy from somewhere else, and you know, it just there needed to be a little bit of structure regarding when grants and donations were when applications went out, and when council would so that it would come in when council was doing the budget, so you could set the budget and then you'd have a good idea of you know, what you're looking at for grants and donations, you know, for that budget year. Regarding capital, this, like I said, staff had come up with this policy from somewhere, and
well, I know the province quite often with their grants they have exclusions, certain things they won't fund.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what came through too, something they put out.
It's possible. Just probably the reasoning behind it is that the township has its own capital expenses and fleets and buildings that should be the priority to the township, rather than subsidizing external organizations,
yeah,
fleets and structures.
Yeah, and the other question in a lot of this too, most of these people who apply, they're private organizations, right? They have their own group or their own board of directors or whatever, so it's benefiting the community as a whole perhaps, but the ownership is actually private. Now maybe I'm wrong on that, I just looked at past experience. Who's applied for them?
Yeah, I don't even know who did apply.
So we've had groups such as the Birdhouse.
Dunamic.
The Birdhouse, the Blue Birdhouse.
Yeah, the Dunamic too, I'm just adding more names.
Okay, yeah, so the Birdhouse. So,
which in a way is capital.
Yeah. So, but they're limited probably on where they can obtain funding. Whereas larger groups like snowmobile clubs may have broader areas of ability to obtain funding.
Yeah.
And same with some of the community groups. I know they received the Ontario 150 funding at one. So there's a larger opportunity just because of the expertise of those in those groups to be able to apply for funding, and it's quite an established organization.
I'm just wondering again. Do they have to be well established an organization as such? The people who build the houses, for instance. It seems like a pretty loose structure how they're organized, whether they hold meetings, whether they have directors, whether they're just a bunch of people coming together to do projects. And I don't know what you would require of them. I know and I don't want to get into the whole discussion on roads again, but there are strict guidelines on there for anybody applying for a grant. It used to be that you had to meet certain criteria before mm-hmm. you could even apply. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering if any criteria here, do you have to be an organized group? Can you be in bunch of guys, or what do you have to be to apply for a grant? I think that's the name of the group that does the, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Dynamic is certainly organized. We've got the Herdville Community Center. They applied, I think, last time,
mm-hmm.
and that's an organization, a private. Agricultural Society gets a donation. They did for arm wrestling. Again, it's a private group that's working on behalf of the community, but mm-hmm. they are private. So I don't know how far we want to delve into this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you want to be able to hand out donations, grants to numerous organizations. You don't want to have any restrictions, particularly when you know the amount of effort that the volunteers put in to their organization and what they provide for the community. So you don't want to have any restrictions, but then again, right at the beginning of the grant policy, it indicates that the township's primary mandate is to provide municipal services to ratepayers. It should not be viewed as a philanthropic organization. So,
nice words, but they really don't, I understand what they mean, but they really don't mean anything, frankly. Right, it's motherhood statement to say that, right? But I agree with it, but it's just motherhood. It doesn't affect an application in my view.
Well, I think what he's saying is that the township doesn't have it's taxpayer money that we're dealing with.
Of course.
So we can't just give it out willy-nilly to anybody.
But the longest I've spent reading is the following request for donation will not be supported on the bottom of the back of page 2 of the policy itself, but... Right, but then again, I think that's useful. And again, we could have saved some of the last applications, the grant applications, by simply providing that to them. In other words, just give them the whole policy and say, here, have a look at this before you complete it, because if you don't qualify, don't waste your time.
So. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I don't know why it's not handed out with the application form.
No, either that or you could reprint it, which is the same thing as handing it out. So, I mean, just, that's the point.
We can add the policy onto the website below or above where the application form is.
Sure.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. good.
Well, and even on the application form, you can say, please, before commencing, please read the grant policy, donation grant policy that's here, right? Because there's no point in wasting their time or ours. So, mm-hmm. And I know last year we had an issue with the timing because we went past March the 1st and we looked at, I don't remember, a few that I remember anyhow, so... and extended the date because I don't really remember why, but we did. And I don't recall what grants we approved either, but do you?
I'm not sure if there were any. Because the deadline was missed.
Yeah, I don't think there was any because this came to council at the July 15th council meeting.
Okay.
And right away, staff should never have entertained it. Indicated, I believe, that possibly one member of council had gone out and solicited, people to put in for these grant donations and not reviewing the policy themselves, wasting everyone's time and energy.
Sure.
Is there a limit?
Well, I would hope so. We haven't set the budget yet, but there'd have to be at some point because... I mean, the pockets will be empty anyway, I think. I'm not even sure if we have a line item for this yet. So. I think this year especially, it's with our reserves depleted and all the requests coming from us are at us. And I think, too, in some cases, well, when I talk about the Recreation and Cultural Center in a minute, you'll see that there's certain things that are just out of our control. They want our money, and we have to give it to them. I'm not sure what the repercussions are if we don't, but... Councilor Hoskin, you were going to say something.
Oh, well, I was looking at the, you brought up originally capital projects on here, and this does get, like, even the birdhouses really is